Those of you who have listened faithfully should know that Dr. Mazzulla's dragon, that symbol manifested from his unconscious, came not just from his unconscious, but from another plane of consciousness, which is the same thing, of course. Now that the alchemist's secret laboratory has gone up in a loud kaboom, we may rest easily, for the dragon has certainly gone for good, I think. However, little Frida was in the laboratory when it exploded, and she too seems to be gone for good, for there is no trace of her either. And so, as we look in on the old mansion of Inverness, we see Jack Flanders with a heavy heart and two equally heavy bags filled with nickels and dimes, moving slowly through the walls of Inverness, making his way once again toward that mysterious fourth tower.
As I pass these portraits, gilded frames and tapestries, it all seems so long ago. The Madonna Vampira, gone from Inverness, lying dead upon a cold marble slab in the palace of that strange lotus land. These hollow walls she lived within, her narrow, surreal realm of endless hallways. I guess I really did love her, in a way. Even after Auntie's warning, she still... Oh, it was all so impossible. Foolish of me to fantasize. She would have devoured me, picked her teeth with the pointed parts of my soul. Still, her heart was good. She knew compassion. And yet, there it was, that destructiveness. It ran in her blood. Oh, I don't care to think about it anymore. Ah, the mirrored door.
Once again, Jack enters through that long mirrored door. And again, he lunges forward and dives through the oval mirror that waits further down the corridor. He stands at the edge of the abyss, watching the clouds slowly drifting below. And then, tying his two sacks of coins to his belt, he moves across the aluminum extension ladder that bridges across the gulf and into the fourth tower of Inverness.
That music, once again luring me on. Oh, I wonder, will I ever find its source? And for what purpose have I been chosen?
Jack continues up the stone steps that circle higher and higher into the tower. He stops at the first door. He presses his ear against the heavy oak planking.
No, the music comes from higher up.
He moves on up the steps. He comes upon a second door. He stops and listens.
Still, the music comes from higher up.
He continues up the steps, higher and higher as they seem to spiral endlessly upwards. But this time he's certain that somewhere, behind that door that stands before him, lies the secret he so perseveringly pursues.
Twice before I've entered this tower, and each time I've entered a different door and discovered a strange world. And now, what awaits me behind this third door? Clouds drifting by. I don't understand.
But as Jack stands there in that doorway that bridges into nothingness, forms begin to take shape. He sees the faint outline of mountains off in the distance. And then, for the first time, he notices a rope ladder fastened to the bottom of the doorframe. He checks out the knots, concludes that it's safe, and begins the long climb down.
This sure is weird. Hanging on this ridiculous rope contraption. I'm going to be mighty disappointed if it ends in midair.
He continues down, watching the rectangular doorway suspended in space, and becoming smaller and smaller as he descends. Finally, he can see a faint green below him. And as he continues downward, the green begins to shape itself into thick vegetation. Trees begin to protrude from the tangled mass, long round branches that look like snakes weave in and out, slithering through thick leaves and vines. Oh, it's a strange jungle that Jack has descended upon.
There's a lot of vines. Looks like I should be able to use the old Tarzan means of transportation. Let's see. Yeah, this one seems plenty strong. I'll give it a try. Ah, fantastic. I'll try another. Well, oh, wow, that's some way to travel. Here I go again. So much for that. Boy, this vegetation is sure thick. Phew. Those giant flowers give off enough perfume to knock one senseless. I better get moving. But in which direction? It's a good question. Ah, yes. In that direction.
Jack starts off, following the sound of the music. But as he continues, the music begins to fade.
That's strange. I'm positive I've been going in the right direction, but now I can hardly hear it. Hey, what's this? A path. A very small path, but it's a path, and it's something to follow.
And so Jack continues. The vegetation becomes less dense. Patches of sky and sunlight can be seen through the lacework branches above his head. The path widens into a small gravel road, and he continues. And then he stops suddenly. For there before him, rising out of the steaming jungle, is a city.
Wow.
But not like any city Jack has ever seen. The walls surrounding the city gleam and sparkle in the sun as though the tile were set with precious gems, while the mosaic tile itself appears almost Arabic, with strange, haunting designs. And above, beyond the walls, the tops of the towers flash like pure gold in the sun. Jack sits down right in the middle of the road.
But this is just like a city out of my childhood dreams.
Jack Flanders, for the third time, has entered the mysterious fourth tower. The soft, eerie music from the 50s has lured him up the steps of the tower, higher and higher until he came upon a third door. Once again, the source of this music appeared to be behind the door, but when he opened it, there was only sky and space. Then he saw a rope ladder. He climbed down, descending for a long time, until he came upon a thick jungle forest. He tried swinging on some vines as a means of transportation. But soon he took to walking. He came upon a path and followed it. After some distance, the path widened into a small gravel road, and then suddenly, there before him, rising out of the thick jungle vegetation, was a city. The walls surrounding the city gleamed and sparkled in the sun as though the tile were set with jewels, while the mosaic tile itself appeared almost Arabic, with strange, haunting designs. And above, beyond the walls, the tops of the towers flashed like gold in the sun.
It's like a city out of my childhood dreams. There's a feeling about this place that reminds me of that Lotus Land. It's as though there's no one living in this city. So different than the Lotus City, but the feeling, the atmosphere of this city is similar. It's as though the streets were filled with people, but I exist on a level where I'm unable to see or hear them.
Jack continues to roam the city, through the empty marketplace, across the silent squares, into the tiny parks. There's no one to be seen. Finally, he leaves. Crossing the city, he leaves through the back gates and continues down the road. Near the stream, alongside the road, is a house, a very small building. But as Jack nears, he hears the sound of someone humming softly to themselves.
What? Good grief, I think there's someone here.
The door is open. Jack enters. Seated at a table is a young boy. Upon the table in front of him are sheets of paper. The boy holds a pen, writing in a language Jack has never seen before. The boy looks up for just a moment, looking Jack full in the eyes. Then he returns to his slow, meticulous writing.
Excuse me. This realm is foreign to me. Can you tell me where I am? Well, can you tell me where all the people have gone? Well, where does this road lead? Look, can you hear me? Can you speak?
The boy looks up and he smiles. With half-closed eyes, he smiles a small, gentle smile. And from across that short distance, Jack is struck with a warmth, an energy that radiates from that smile and showers Jack as though a golden sun has just flashed its rays deep into his soul. And then the boy speaks.
I don't know how to read or write. I'm writing my history.
But how can you write if you don't know how to write or read? He's writing his history, and he can't read or write. This boy is quite mad.
And so Jack takes his leave, returning to the silent city.
Just my luck. One person in this whole weird place, and he's off his nut. The only thing I can think of now is to search out these buildings and see if there's a jukebox somewhere. That's the key.
All that day and into the evening, he explores the houses, mangers, temples, and is awed by the imaginative designs and intricate craftsmanship. But no jukebox. And as the sky turns rose and then dark lavender, and the shadows creep long across the city, Jack returns back to that small building outside the walls of that eerie city. And he is there, sitting there, watching the mad boy silently writing his history, while the wind chimes softly move in the evening breeze. A peacefulness comes upon him, the sort of peacefulness that happens so rarely in one's lifetime. A deep love fills his heart. He watches the eyes of that mad boy, and for the first time in his life, he understands the word compassion. Love without attachment, not asking for anything in return, simply giving out of pure love. Jack feels that he could sit there forever in that silence. A silence so thick it seems as though it could be sliced open with a sword. And once opened, the inside would reveal all the hidden secrets of the universe.
Tune in at this same time tomorrow when you'll hear...
Jack Flanders, I presume.
Black embryo.
Why, yes.
Honey snuffer, boy.
Henry Jowles. Delighted to make your acquaintance.
Sir Henry Jowles.
You always believe what you're told.
I'm your nephew.
The Fourth Tower is produced by ZBS Media.